Rogers, Chase, Anthony Joseph, Prime Stay, Holiday Homes. Most awarded agent in Dubai, his name is Anthony. Portfolios, he's scaling really high, that's why they can't compete. The first time that he came out to Dubai, he didn't have a thing. Now he's out here changing all these lives, and it's a masterpiece.
And we are back with our favorite guest, Dr. Anand Menon, to discuss the latest updates happening in our beloved city, Dubai. Doctor, what's going on with the new airport announcement? I'm seeing all developers going there, getting themselves new plots. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, firstly, I'd like to say what's not going on as a result of that announcement. You see, that's what I love about the city of Dubai. Every time the rulers and the government have made these amazing announcements, it's actually intentional. It's planned out. We publish our agendas for the next 10 years, for the next 17 years, for the world to see. No other city ever does that. And we are actually backing it up with every new project launch or major initiative. Because if you will notice in the language that is always used, there will be a line saying, in line with the Dubai Economic Agenda objectives. So everything that is being done is a conscious effort. It is not just a thought that comes out of nowhere. It's a planned, structured development for the future. So to come to the airport now, everybody knows the most of the basic numbers. It's all out on social media. So it's now 128 billion dirhams that's going to be put into the airport expansion. When the airport is completed in 2030, we are looking at around 260 million passengers every single year going through that airport. That's over 700,000 people every single day. Now, the size of that airport is 70 square kilometers. Let's put that number in perspective. If you look at the downtown area, which is popular, everybody knows it, it's 2 square kilometers. So if you imagine an area 35 times the size of downtown, that is the Maktoum International Airport. It's 5 times the size of Dubai International Airport. We have 5 major runways. No airport in the world has more than 2. We've got 5 main runways, and then the feeder lines are there, 5 terminal buildings, 400 gates. That's the capacity that we're going to be handling. That's in terms of the airport in size. Now, what does this mean for that area? You see, the government is building a city in the desert. We've already acknowledged Dubai South as a city by itself. Around 1 million people are going to be living in that area by 2030. That is 17% of the population of Dubai, because we're expecting to hit 6 million by 2033. So between 17 to 19% of the population, that is 1 out of every 5 people in Dubai, is going to be living in the Dubai South area. That's because you're having the aviation city, the industrial city, the enterprise city, the logistics city. All of them are coming up in that area. How is it possible that real estate will not be in demand in that area? We don't have enough opportunity for 1 million people. On an average, in the last 5 years, if you look at that area, the average number of units launched was 2,000 units a year. We are already expecting around 4,000 units by next year in that area, and it is going to go upwards. Price appreciations between 10 to 15% for the first 1 or 2 years. And then as more and more of the actual construction activity becomes visible, it's going to scale up dramatically. So you really want to make your money, you should be going in there now. That's why if you look at developers like Emaar, they already had the Oasis close to that. Now they have announced 2 more mega communities at 96 billion. Country Heights and there, and you got the Heights Club. It's coming up there. Now, Damac has also announced its mega community just a little further up from there. Majid Al Futtaim is now talking about another mega community. So you're looking at developers with legacy, reputation, who have been part of the landscape for the last 24 to 25 years. They're all coming in that area. Emaar South and Dubai South is the next big thing on the radar. So if anybody does not look at that area now, I think they're going to lose out on great opportunities. Most of the developers there are already planning their launches. Those who don't have plots are picking it up now. It's a clear indicator. I'll only pick up a plot if I believe that area has got future potential. It is part of Dubai South. We know the lifestyle coming. There's Palm Jebel Ali just across. It also makes sense to put our airport there because perfectly placed midpoint or midway between Dubai and Abu Dhabi. So the next big thing for us is Dubai South.
I made a video last week explaining to people, for investors specifically, what kind of tenants you can be expecting. And the Class A definitely is going to be all of the captains, flying, where even Emirates pay their own accommodation. Usually it's $100,000 per year. Then you have the regular flats or the townhouses that can be used by managers and directors. And finally, the affordable living studios and one bedroom that can be for all of the laborers. You can also add on this that lots of warehouses will be in need because so many businesses will open there, especially the business that they are the offshore businesses. This will be the location they're going to be picking up, not to mention offices and everything related to retail and commercials.
Yeah, and with District 2020 friendly free zone, which is encouraging the startups, you're seeing a lot of the big global companies also moving there. Just one example, there's many, but one example is a company called Engie. It's a Belgian and French company, one of the top three, I believe, in the world on energy. They have moved their head offices into that area recently. And so, and they did it even before the expansion was announced. So that area is going to become premium, but we're also getting the villa community lifestyles coming up in that area. It's a clear indicator that the infrastructure in that area is already being put into place. And what came out in the newspapers was, you see, we have the Dubai Economic Agenda, which where we stand right now at 14.6 trillion, and we're going to go up to 26.2 trillion by 2033. We're now talking numbers of 32 trillion. 32 trillion. In a span of 1 year, we're now expanding because of the way the world is responding to it. We will be targeting 32 trillion now, not 26.2 trillion.
Doctor, in March 2022, they have put Dubai on the grey list.
Yes, correct.
And we just got removed like a couple of months ago. What does this mean to the city?
Okay. Firstly, it's a very positive move. We need to understand who monitors this grey list, who actually puts countries on this. It is an association called FATF, which is the Financial Action Task Force. Now, they are headquartered in Paris, but they monitor transparency, money laundering, trafficking, and they're doing a lot to check on how currencies are moving from one city to another, country to another. And they're looking at the sources of all of this. We have 200 countries in the world. There's only 39 countries that are members of FATF. Now, what does that mean? While a lot of this activity is happening in many countries still, about 20% of the world's countries have actually become members of this, and we are part of it. So we are already in the top 20%. So the intent is very clear from Dubai. We want to be seen as a city or as a country, the UAE, where we are transparent. We want good, clean money dealings. We do not support the terrorism. We do not support the drug trafficking, the financing of warlords. We are not part of that. So we have actually gone onto that list. Now, when we went onto that list, yes, we were on the grey list because there were a lot of things that needed to be done. The UAE has cleaned out its act, so it's having very, very positive impact. When the announcement came out in February of 2024 that we were off the list, immediately we saw in March and April a jump in the number of investors coming out of Europe. The British overtook the Indians as well, because there are a lot of people who do not want to go to countries where they feel their money can get stuck, because if there's serious international action that is taken by FATF, funds can get frozen. So people did not want to take those risks. That's why Northern America, Canada, US, you do have Australia, you have Europe. Many of them were not Asian countries. Some of the Asian countries were not big on Dubai because their concern was you're still on the grey list. Once we went off it, immediately we saw the appreciation. If you look at the first quarter of this year, villa prices went up an average of 1.9% every month. Apartment prices. And villas went up 2.1%, which is incredible, suggesting a 22% increase by the end of this year. We'll have to see how the rest of the year pans out. But all industry experts are very clear. They're expecting the upward trend to continue this year, 25 and even 26, because of what's happening. Now, another reason why we did this. Part of the Dubai Economic Agenda 2033 is to double the foreign direct investment. And we are looking at greenfield opportunities, which is massive investment amounts coming from the large multinational corporations to set up their own factories to get into production and become long-term players on our economic landscape. That is a greenfield investment. Yes, last year, Sheikh Hamdan announced in just 6 months Dubai became number one on the planet with foreign greenfield investments. We had 511 projects that got registered in Dubai. Singapore, which is number two, and we know it's an incredible city, had 186. There were 325 greenfield investments behind Dubai. That means for every one greenfield mega investment project in Singapore, four were announced in Dubai. And this was even when they knew we are doing everything to get off the grey list. Imagine what's going to happen now, particularly that we are, it's confirmed we are off it with the expansions, with the agenda going forward. The world is ours to take.
It just came to my next question. I wanted to ask you, is like, we're seeing that Dubai is getting the attention of everyone, whether they've been here or not. It's competing with the major countries, major city when it comes to the most stable economy, the most visited cities, the number of millionaires, centimillionaires, billionaires moving in here. So tell us, like, why people are picking Dubai on other countries to take it as their hub, their base, their center for business, and kind of like the main living in a year.
Okay. I'll answer that with a couple of questions to you first, Anthony, and then I'll give some information on that. Would you take your wife and travel to a city that's unsafe?
Doctor, you know my love to Dubai. You know how much I appreciate this place. I've made my business. I get married in here. I made my life in Dubai. So for me, it comes number one. When I'm asking you this question, it's just like for the people who have no idea about the city. So for me, if I want to travel, first, I want to make sure I'm going somewhere where it's safe,
exactly.
Somewhere where it's fun, where okay. I do have activities, and I will enjoy talking to locals because it's very important. And you can see this in Asia, as much as they are touristics, but most of the time the locals are not that nice. So I try to avoid these kind of places.
Okay. The reason I ask this question is when we want people who do not understand Dubai and they're outside, we can give them the facts and the numbers. But when people have lived here for all these years and seen what this event, our answers do make a difference.
Absolutely.
So for example, if you had to ask me, would I go to some place and take my family there if it was not safe? And if I had crime rates, the height of a skyscraper, the answer is no. Would I want to go to a country where I do not feel accepted or part of their culture? I don't feel the hospitality of those people and I do not have all these opportunities to have fun when I'm there? Answer is no. Would I go to a city or a country where the economic policies are not friendly to me as a foreigner and do not allow me equal opportunity to set up businesses and to set it up in a streamlined manner? Answer is no. Would I want to go to a city where there is the financial freedom and access to money, both physical as well as digital, the future of the world, with the currency houses, with the exchanges, with the ATM machines? Answer is no. There's several things. What about the religious tolerance and the freedom that we enjoy here? While a lot of countries talk human rights, human rights, human rights, I'm sorry, we treat people better here than the first world countries that claim to have the human rights. So if you look at all of these dynamics, we are scoring very high on each of these. Now to come specifically to the question, you see the millionaires and the billionaires of the world, they can go anywhere on the planet. You buy a piece of real estate, you will get your PRs and you can walk in. So when they have the opportunity to go to the best cities on the planet, why are they choosing Dubai? Now, these are millionaires and billionaires. They've done their due diligence. They've got their smarts in place. They're not attracted here for a job. They're not just coming here because the value of the currency allows them to send more money home. They don't need that. They're coming for the lifestyle, for the safety, for the opportunities to be part of a lifestyle that is competing with the best in the world. If you look at the wealthiest cities of the world report, 2023, the 24 one is not out. This is by Henley and Partner. So they actually have measured the wealthiest cities in the world, and they are doing that by looking at the concentration of millionaires, billionaires, and centimillionaires. We are in the top 20. But we're 25, 27 years old as a city. I know we're 50 years old as a country, but the Dubai that people talk about today is not the Dubai of 40 years ago. So in 20 to 25 years, we have now come in the top 20 cities in the world where other cities have had hundreds of years to be able to attract the millionaires and billionaires. In Dubai, we have 68,400 millionaires, centimillionaires. We've got 15 billionaires, 206 centimillionaires, and about 58,200 millionaires. Now, if you look by numbers, it doesn't give you the real picture, because if you look at New York, they have 340,000 millionaires. Okay, you can look at London, they have 258,000 millionaires. Beijing has got 128,000 millionaires. Shanghai, 127,000 millionaires. So if you just look at those numbers, it will not give the true picture.
Why, what's yes, the population they of have. The cities
it
that you're mentioning?
It is in relation to the population and the percentage growth. So if you look at both, let's look at the in relation to population.
Beijing, we are 4 million in Dubai.
Sorry?
We're not even 4 million in
3.65
Dubai.
Now. Yeah. Okay. So if you look at the percentage of people in a city like Beijing, it is 0.6% of the population are millionaires. If you look at Shanghai, 0.5. If you look at Dubai, it's 2%. Three times those cities. And have you seen those size of the cities and how long they've been in business? Yes, of course, London and New York is ahead of us. We will catch up with them. But then they've had the hundreds of years. So London's at 2.9. They're not too far from us. Actually, if you look at the population of 2024, it's 9.7. So it actually drops to 2.6.
Doctor, as you mentioned earlier, it's because of the low quality of life happening in the UK and happening in the States. Yeah. People are moving in here.
Infrastructures are crumbling in those places. So one is, when you look at percentage of millionaires to the population in those cities, we are literally beating most of them. New York is good at 3.8, but then New York has had 500 years. So we will definitely get there. But an important statistic to look at is the percentage growth of millionaires. If you look at London, it's minus 15% now. It's actually going the other way because people are leaving. If you look at Singapore, one of the best cities in the world, it is 40%. Good number. Look at New York, it's 40%. If you look at New York, Shanghai, the percentage of growth is good. It is 70%. But if you look at Dubai, it's 62%. So the city in the desert is attracting more and more millionaires to keep coming in. LA, Los Angeles is only 35%. So it's not just the number of millionaires. You look at it based on the population size, and we are in a very strong place. But you also look at the percentage increase of the millionaires each year. That is a clear indicator to you which city is the number one preference for people on the planet. And we come right to the top on that.
And this is without having the casinos operating, without having the flying cars operating, which they're saying
which is coming
be
26.
Very soon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It 26. Can happen anytime. So we have lots of stuff to be attracting so many other people.
My view, I mean, we've done a lot of podcasts over the last couple of years, and everything we've been talking about has been happening. The city is proving itself. It's the only city with its agenda published, and we are doing it. People either wake up now and come in early, so you maximize the advantage, or you come after 5 years, we'll still welcome you. You'll pay four times. And we are okay with that, because the people who came now, they were smart, they'll make their money off you.
You're absolutely right. There is nothing that has been announced in this city that wasn't delivered.
100%.
Maybe it got delayed a few months or a year, but eventually it gets delivered. And speaking about crazy stuff, 100 million mangrove trees on our beaches, making Dubai beaches green. What's this about?
Okay, one of the major objectives of the urban master plan 2040. By then, we are going to be number one in the world. That's the grand scheme of that plan, is Dubai to become number one. One of it was to make 60% of the land areas green. So while you'll see more and more parks coming, one of the mandatory requirements now will be that all the large communities are going to have a lot of greenery. We can already see in any launch, you'll see green, you'll see beaches, you'll see water. We're bringing beaches into the desert. So you'll see that. But what we are also planning to do is 100 million mangrove trees are being planted over a 72-kilometer area, so that we will have beaches that are going to look green, not just sand extending into a desert or concrete buildings. It's a huge initiative, which I think is going to help environmentally. It is going to help with sustainability. It's going to help in cooling down the cities, attracting in more rain. That's what happens when your places are green. Look at some of the greenest places on the planet. They attract a lot of rain. That's going to happen. In addition to that, the Dubai Reef project, the Dubai Reef and the mangroves were all announced in December last year in line with COP28 because of sustainability. We've had in the last 30 years alone, globally, 50% of the corals have been destroyed. And corals are really critical for the health of our oceans, sustainability, reproduction and growth of marine life. It's very important in terms of sustainability, cooling the temperature levels in the water, and we lost it. And we are losing it for two reasons. Today, people are preferring waterfront lifestyles, so therefore there's a lot of man-made construction activity happening along the coast, not just in Dubai. You'll see Indonesia, very, very popular. So there's a lot of it happening. In addition to that, because of the global warming, we've had the land ice masses, the big glaciers are all melting. So therefore, sea levels are rising, temperatures are going up, corals being destroyed do not allow marine life to continue. So there's a big concern for a lot of people in terms of sustainability. Dubai has taken that initiative because we are also doing a lot of waterfront lifestyles. But what I haven't seen in most of the other countries is while you are developing your waterfronts for business, what are you doing to develop the environment proportionate with that? Here, we have announced most of our waterfront lifestyles now are still under concept and design, and some of them are under construction. So at the same time, we are now creating 600 square kilometers of artificial coral reef. Last week, the inaugural announcement came for 200 square kilometers. It is already the biggest artificial coral reef in the world. It will have 1 billion corals in there. So while we recognize that we need to develop these lifestyles and give the opportunity, we want to make sure that people who come and live there in the future will live in an eco-friendly environment with the luxury of waterfront lifestyle. And we want to protect our planet. We have only one planet. We don't yet know how to live somewhere else.
Tell us about the golden visas.
Okay. I think most people are aware of the golden visas now, but there's a bit of miscommunication out there that, and sometimes, to be honest, it's our brokers themselves who are, or even sales people in developers who are actually saying, yeah, no problem. You'll get the golden visa when you put your down payment and you can keep it even if you sell. That is not true. That is not true at all. So let me explain what happens. Firstly, how does the system work? If you are a resident in Dubai already and you have purchased property before, and once this rule was implemented that upon the down payment you can apply, all property that is registered at 2 million and above is linked through the ICP app. So when your visa is ready for renewal, you will get notification that you are already pre-qualified for golden visa. That is to take care of everybody who bought in the past who don't yet have the golden visa. People buying now will get the golden visa. However, it is linked and locked to the property. That means a 10-year visa requires that the property of 2 million value is locked for 10 years. So what happens then as an investor, if I want to sell it, can I retain the golden visa? And there is a way to do it. So let's say I want to sell my property. I cannot go to the land to the transfer offices because they will not be able to do the transfer since it is locked to the 10-year visa. So if I have to sell it, I need to be holding some other property of value 2 million or more. And then I take those original documents and go to the land department, not RERA, land department. Land department will look at the originals, which says, okay, you already have property existing with you worth 2 million. They're anyway through ICP telling people you're pre-approved. So since you already have that and the originals are here, land department issues the valuation certificate. You cannot go to any valuation company because they might look at a 1.8 million and say 2.1. So land department will issue the valuation certificate. I now take that certificate and I go to the transfer office. I present that along with all my other documents. When they look at that, they will release the golden visa from the property that you're planning to sell, and they will lock that visa with the valuation certificate on the other property that you have presented. Now you can sell, but you still retain the visa. This is very clear. People need to be sure about what they're saying. Telling a person you can sell and have the visa is not entirely correct. You have to tell the person you can sell, but you need to have other property against which this visa will be transferred. And it is property, not just any investment of 2 million. It must be other property of 2 million. The only other option for you, you have to cancel the visa. Why? The next person who's buying it, he has the right to stay in it. He should get the visa. So that's something that people, I think, should be really clear on when they talk to investors.
Let's come to the sales.
To sales.
Sales. Okay. The best part of the pod. The launch is happening in Q2 2024, comparing to the launches happening in Q2 2023. Without going into numbers, we've seen that the numbers are really dropping. It's not the volume of sales, but the quantity of launches, because last year was madness. We were having 5-6 a day. This year, we're seeing they are getting more conservative, picking up new mustard communities. What would be the reason?
Okay, Dubai at the moment, if you look at the personality of the launches that we have had this year, Q1, 93% that was launched were apartments. 93%. 6.3%. was townhouses
and villas.
Only 0.5%, 0.4 to 0.5% were villas. So the need of the hour in Dubai now is both apartments as well as the villas, but it is more critical for the villas. Now, villas and townhouses would come in mega communities, which is the reason why you're seeing more and more of the mega communities getting launched. And you don't launch that as easily as you would launch an individual tower. So that is the reason why individual towers will continue to launch, because we have a shortage even in the affordable categories. So there will be more and more of those coming as well. But the focus right now is in line with the hype and the buzz around the Dubai South developments. You're going to see more and more mega communities getting launched with a higher concentration on the villas and townhouses. It will continue as we peak, as we have more people coming in. We had over 106,000 new residents that came in Q1 of this year, but we had only 6,500 units that were handed over. So the demand is 300% higher than the actual handovers. Because even if you take an average family size of 5 in Dubai, it's 5.3 in Dubai. If I have 106,000 people, I'm talking of nearly 21,000 homes that are needed in just because of the first quarter. We are handing over 6,500. Of those, some have bought so they can move into that and stop paying rents. So those are not available to the new people coming in. Half of the others will be picked up by guys like you for short stays, and the staycation companies will take it. So out of 6,500, you'll probably have 3,000 units available when we require 21,000 units every quarter. We are short significantly in each area. So I believe there will be a lot more towers being launched, but you will see that a lot in the waterfront, in the affordable categories as well. It will come.
Now we're going to speak about personal opinions.
Wow, okay.
Personal opinions.
Okay.
And I'm going to lay it out, talking as an investor. Doctor, you're sleeping on 4 million dirham. Okay. Would you buy 3-4 units of flats to lease it out, or would you buy a villa and flip it? Which option would you pick?
Okay, it depends on the kind of investor you are. See, we have two types of investors, opportunity-based investors and the security-based
investors. You are the greedy investor who wants to get capital gain, the maximum ROI per year.
Let's call him an opportunity investor. Okay, opportunity investors will flip because they don't want to wait 3-5 years. They don't want to wait. And even you wait 3-5 years, two challenges. Your ROI is always low. Why? Because I'm paying out more on my plan. So whatever return I get, the 7-8% through my rental yields is coming on a much higher capital that I've put in. The flipping within an 18 months or 24, if that is my interest, I'm flipping it on a 50%, in some cases 40%. So my rate of return is always going to be higher. And if I'm the speculative investor, the one who wants the highest possible return, that's what I'm doing.
What would you pick? You buy apartments or you get a villa?
If at this point in time I would pick, and if I want to do the flipping, I'd go for apartment.
You'll go for apartment?
Yes.
I will do the total opposite.
Okay, that's...
And let me tell you why. It's again, it's personal opinions. But following that, all of the offloading I've been doing this year, that we have even surpassed maybe 80 or 90 units in just like 3-4 months. What I am seeing that once I list a villa, I get enormous numbers of serious inquiries. These guys wants to finish. When I'm having apartments in the market, I'm getting those shark investors who just want to milk it. They want to give you OP or maybe even minus, and they want to negotiate the commission and just to get those units to sleep on it and flip it later on. So what I'm seeing now that there is mega demand for villas, which is 10 times higher than apartments.
Of course,
because of the shortage of the villas and townhouses.
Not only the shortage, it's the golden visa. There is a higher probability that a villa or townhouse will break that 2 million barrier, which allows me to get the golden visa. But again, if you look at the dynamics of the market, the shortage that we have is because there hasn't been launches. That is going to get taken care of in the next 3 months, 4 months. You're going to have a lot of that. But when we have 250,000 people who are coming into the city, 70 to 80% of those people are going to be looking for apartments. They're first-time people coming in here. They're not the millionaires and the billionaires of the world. Only 4,000 of those are coming every year, right? Those are going to go for mansions and they're going to go waterfront and things like that. But the people who are coming in, Dubai has now become a talent magnet for the world through the Dubai Global Initiative. So a lot of these people are coming with startup jobs. Some of them would be wanting studios. They might be just a couple coming in. So they'll be looking for one bedrooms. They might have one kid. Many of these people right now would not have the capital that they're sitting on to put into that. They will buy it, wait for 3-4 years, secure some money here from their businesses or whatever they do, sell these units. That will become their down payments into their larger villas. And that's why if you look at the trend by the developers, if the demand wasn't really going to be there, why would 93% of the launches be in that area? I'm sure the developers, in line with the government, are looking at the agenda, the 2033-2040, looking at which type of people are going to be brought into the city. If 4,000 millionaires are coming in 1 year, and you're expecting 250,000 people to come into the city, you're getting what percentage of that are the millionaires who will easily walk into that? So that is the reason why the demand will still continue to be there for the apartments. I think both of them are going to have demand. One of the reasons why I would pick up the apartments is it gives me a certain amount of flexibility. What do I mean by that? Let's say I've taken an apartment, a villa. Now I've locked in my 2 million, 2.5, 3 million into that one thing. I get the golden visa. But if I'm an investor, I probably took it to make money, right? Let's say something goes wrong and I need money. I have to exit.
You can release equity on it.
Yes.
You can release equity.
I have to release. I'm out.
You play with
it. I'm out of it. But if I've got 4 or 5 units, I can let go of 2 or 3 and still be part of the game and still continue to make money. That flexibility is one. The second flexibility I have is I have choice. I could probably pick up something in a Damac Hills 2. I could also consider something now in a Dubai South. And I can consider in another area.
Spreading that.
I can spread it. And then later I can see which one performs better. The other ones I can get rid of and get in there. When I make the decision on the villa or the townhouse, I have to be really, really sure I'm doing the right one. Because I have just that one opportunity. And I'm either in it or I'm out. So there are a few more flexibilities that you will get. Third reason for it. Many of the people who are looking to buy homes, we have seen this trend with first home buyers.
Yeah.
71,000 units last year. That is 43% of the people who bought were first time buyers coming into the market. These people who don't want to pay rents are looking to own. So many of these people are probably going to start with their apartments first. Not that many are going for the villa. And today, because these people may not get mortgages, the reason they will not get a mortgage is most of them have got very high payouts already, credit cards, personal loans, car loans, etc. So the EMI that a bank can recover towards a mortgage is very low. So there's a very slim chance they'll get the 80% and they still have to pay 20% cash. They might end up getting only 30%. In which case I have to pay 70% or 60%. But if I could do that already, I wouldn't go for the mortgage.
I think for this clientele, the developers are targeting them with the 1%.
Because, so yes, because perfectly. What is the logic of the developer? We understand that you do not have that kind of cash to be able to pay. Even if you had to go to a bank, you will still need to pay 20%. Give us the 20%. We will give you a 7-year plan. There will obviously be a small markup on that. So it's like instead of the mortgage from them, it's coming through us. However, look at the approval process. If I had to go to a bank today, they don't make it easy for you. Right? They actually first look at you like as if you're a crook because they want to protect their money. And the number of documents you'll have to give, the due diligences, the background checks on you is crazy. A developer saying, if you have that 20%, come to me. The risk is on me. And we will give you that opportunity with that 1%. You're never paying lesser with a 1% plan. Never. Because you'll, in fact, sometimes you'll be paying a little more than if you took a straight off plan with a 3-year something, 60-40. Because I'm paying 1% every month. So let's say, but after 6 months, they'll say you pay an additional 5%. So
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
ending up paying.
It goes back to one.
Yeah. So I'm paying 11% in 6 months. I can put 20% on a plan.
Let's be honest. The developer's cost is 30%. Once he receives that amount, he's just broke even with the project.
But
adding on the 1%, that extra amount is kind of they're charging interest to borrow that money,
correct.
which is the legal right to do. End of
no,
the day,
no,
we're
fine.
Not picking
I,
it
yeah,
on
I understand
them.
That, but you need to understand also as a buyer. That is what you sacrifice to get that benefit of the soft plan. Because if you look at the selling price of a unit, which is on the 3-year plan, like a 60-40, and you look at the same unit on a 7-year plan, there is already a difference. Everybody who buys it on the 60-40 will have 3 to 4% edge over you every single year in terms of rental yields. And they can play a bit more and get a competitive price in the market below yours. So what will happen when you list, you will actually help them sell. So that disadvantage you have to keep in mind. Because what I tell people, you have the 20%, put it down, right? If you have to put 1% every month for the next 6 months and you're paying actually 6% in that month, there's a 5%, you're paying 11%. But the developers are telling you pay 20% and pay 10% within 6 months. All you need to do is to provide for yourself a 1.5% a month. Keep that aside. You're still on track, but at least you'll get it at a more attractive price. So your returns are better. In addition to that, when you want to resell, your appreciation is better. However, those kind of plans are usually coming from the premium developer. So the initial entry is slightly higher than what is being given on the 1% plans. So there's the plus and minus for both.
And these buyers have no other option. Either you can stay with the tenant or that's the only way you're going to become a landlord. Doctor, final question. What has been going on in the land department this week? Cash transactions is almost what, 5.5 billion that happened last week?
Yeah, I think the month of April is not a very good indicator. You have to remember the average, if you're talking, was less. 1 week was wiped out, literally, with some of the rains. But we still did 11 billion that week.
Not to mention, we had the Eid as well at the beginning of April, like 6-7
days. But if you look
at
the average numbers, look at the first 4 months of the year. I always tell people when you're looking for a shift in trend, don't look for one particular day or 1 week or even 1 month. A trend shift will happen over 6 months to 8 months. So that's how you look at it. Also, it's not you don't look at it as 1 week, one day, because remember, what we are talking about is numbers are not physical sale happening on those days. Some of those registrations could have been 2 months ago a sale, 3 months ago, SPA delays, whatever it may be. So we only are going with registered transactions, which is not an indicator of physical visits and doing any transaction. Only in the secondary, the transfer and leasing, yes, that happens. So if you look at 4 months, which will give you a better indicator of the market, we've done 59,000.
So
bless you. Okay. We've done 59,500 transactions in the last 4 months. 202 billion. With a cash investment at a total of 82% and mortgage was 18%. But if you look at the value of the transaction, it was 70% for the cash transactions, 30% for the mortgages. And the reason is the mortgages were all being taken on the ready units. The average price of a ready unit for the last 4 months on mortgage was 5.9. The average price of the off-plan, or not off-plan, cash people are paying, but including all the off-plan, was 2.9. So the average, if I put everything together, was 3.4 million per unit. Now, that is an interesting number when you look at it. Even if you look at the cash, off-plan was 2.9. Literally now, most of the launches that are coming out that are actually being picked up, people are targeting the 2 million barrier for the golden visa.
For the golden visa. I see all of these figures in front of you. You want to discuss something?
Well, we did. We already talked about most of these numbers.
This. And doctor, thanks a lot for this amazing information. As usual, thanks a lot, guys, for watching.
Can I interrupt you, Anthony?
You don't need to ask. Go ahead.
Okay. There's one thing I would like, and this is what I would like to say to those who listen to the podcast. Firstly, thank you for giving us your time because you believe we are adding value to you. However, when we speak, Anthony, we use a lot of numbers. We give a lot of research. We quote a lot of reports. There is no way, no way anyone is going to remember all of this in here just by listening to it once. They'll walk away from this motivated, excited, but it hasn't sunk in yet. And very quickly, one day later, you've forgotten 80% of it. What I normally recommend to them, you want this information to be impactful for you, to help you to close deals, to show your buyers and sellers why the market makes sense. So if you really want to get your ROI, return on intelligence, from this kind of information, you have to watch these a few times. One. Secondly, take notes. I have come even with notes myself, even though I use information always. You will never master this. There's just so much happening in the city and we keep putting all the content. You really want to have the impact, get serious about what you're listening to. Repeat listening to it a few times. Take notes down. You will automatically understand it better. And when you speak with clients, it comes out stronger. That's how you get the real value from these podcasts.
Absolutely. And if you need any more information or any training, feel free to reach out directly on the Google Calendar and we're going to make sure we will take it on. Thank you guys for watching this episode. See you in the next one.
Anthony Joseph. Prime Stay. Holiday Homes. Most awarded agent in Dubai, his name is Anthony. Portfolios, he's scaling really high, that's why they can't compete. The first time that he came out to Dubai, he didn't have a thing. Now he's out here changing all these lives and it's a masterpiece.